Stein, talk about the verification of the version set in diagram vector.
Okay, thank you. As indicated, I'll be talking about this conjecture that Bertrand Swinnerton Dyer made many years ago. And specifically, well, what happened was that I was sitting at the American Institute of Math, and Mikhail came up to me and he said that he was interested in systematically verifying the Bertrand Swinnerton Dyer conjecture for specific elliptic curves, and that John Carmona had told him to talk to me because I had sort of done things along these lines for abelian varieties in my thesis and was interested in it, though I hadn't really looked at elliptic curves. And we sort of kicked around some ideas for doing this and realized it would be maybe more difficult than initially expected. And then that was about 3 years ago, and then sort of one stage of doing this is now complete, so I'll tell you about the result of that stage. I mentioned this to John Carmona when I saw him last week in Nottingham, and he said that certain people were fond of saying that, you know, it's sort of strange that there are so very few curves which you actually know the full Bertrand Swinnerton Dyer conjecture, not just the rank part, but the exact formula. So sort of a shockingly small list of curves. I hear a hmm. So this is a kind of a big project, and I have a lot of collaborators. So Grigor Gurov, who just finished his PhD with Richard Taylor at Harvard, and a couple of undergrads, Andrei Jorza, Stefan Petricas, and Karina Tarnita Petrescu, so some Romanians and so on. And of course, Stephen Donnelly and Michael Stoll were helpful at certain stages, and there are many thanks to other people. So let me tell you one other technical point. I'm going to assume that the Manning constant of each elliptic curve of conductor up to 1,000 is equal to 1.
That's false. That's for optimal curves.
I only define the Manning constant for optimal curves. And if you have a non-optimal curve, if you have a non-optimal curve, I would define it to be the constant associated to the corresponding optimal curve. But for the purposes of considering the Bertrand Swinnerton Dyer conjecture, it suffices to consider only the optimal curves. This is something that, that point aside, this is something that I thought Carmona had verified. So in order to verify this, what you have to do is start with your elliptic curve given as a quotient of J naught of n in the sense of modular symbols, and compute the C4 and C6 invariants, and check that they're the invariants of a minimal Weierstrass equation. So Carmona does this in the course of finding elliptic curves. But when he computes the C4 and C6 invariants, there's some floating point numbers that appear along the way, and he doesn't rigorously verify bounds on the errors in those computations. So presumably this is true, and it's true modulo the possibility that
you can do it in a different way. You can just take generators for gamma naught to n and look at what the image of the curve is.
Yes, but still doing exactly that computation, you still have to carefully bound the precisions of your errors. Otherwise, you haven't rigorously proved that the Manning constant's 1. I mean, it's conceivable that you would, think the number is something, but if you were to use a whole bunch more terms in the series, you get a different number. Do you agree? Or the sense of rigor I mean here is very high. I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying it hasn't been done.
This is a rigorous proof.
I have no doubt at all that one could rigorously do this, but I don't think anyone has. There's a big difference. I don't know. The level of rigor in experimental math is too low, so I want to be more careful than some people. So here's a statement. Now, remember, I'm implicitly assuming something, but it's something that's certainly true. There's no doubt at all about it. So suppose you have some elliptic curve in John Carmona's book, the table of elliptic curves of conductor up to 1,000, and it does not have complex multiplication, so it's not one of the 44 up to isogeny that you would omit, and has rank at most 1, which emits 18 more curves. And you have a prime p that doesn't divide any Tamagawa number of the elliptic curve, and there's no rational p isogeny. So if you have an elliptic curve in Carmona's book with a few conditions on a prime, then the p part of the Bertrand Swinnerton Dyer conjecture is true for that elliptic curve. So This a proof of this statement, a computational verification of the statement, is what this talk is about today. Okay? So so now I'll start at the beginning and tell you more about what the conjecture says. And so. Any questions?
If you do have a PR logic, then it's usually also easy to verify the key part.
So at the end of this talk, I'm going to make a list of seven ideas for another paper that somebody should write with me. And one example of such a paper is to, and this is, I have them in order of difficulty, one of the easier ones will be to go through the list of curves in John Cremona's book, and when you have a rational P isogeny so that this theorem doesn't apply, you verify that P part of Shaw is trivial as the conjecture says it should be. So that's a problem. We need to show a whole bunch of Selmer groups have sort of minimal rank given the Mordell Weigh rank. But that hasn't been done. It's just that in principle it should be easier. And this isn't just, one other thing, this isn't just a work in progress. I've written all this up, I've written all this up and it's on my webpage and submitted, so you can actually look at it. Okay, once upon a time, many, but not too many years ago, conjectures proliferated. So Birch gave a lecture he wrote a paper which began very nicely. The subject of this lecture is rather a special one. And then he talked about these computations did with Swinnerton Dyer on the computer, and at the very sort of near the end of the first paragraph, he says, experimentally, we have detected certain relations between different invariants of elliptic curves, and have been unable to approach the proofs of these relations, which must lie very deep. And at that time, they hadn't proved that those relations hold for a single elliptic curve. In fact, I think even 15 years after they made the conjecture, still there wasn't one single elliptic curve for which the conjecture was verified. That wasn't done until about 20 years. That was, I think, more than 15 years. Okay, well, it was right on the edge. I think Rubin was the first to verify Shaw as finite in any particular case, not Coates-Wiles. So. I mean, you need to do a little more work than just prove the main conjecture. Okay, so there they are. But you don't really need this picture because you can just look in the middle. Okay, so now just some basic things, but you probably know all this. Here's the L function. I've left out the bad primes. That's where there's a star. You throw in the bad primes and there's a star, you have the L function LES. And it's a nice theorem of Weyl's, Bray, Conrad, Diamond, and Taylor, and some classical input that this L function is a holomorphic function on the whole complex plane. So this is some product, and it has the nice property that if you look at it formally at 1, then you get the product P over NP. So you might imagine that if the curve has large rank, then NP would be larger than minimal on average. So maybe this product would sort of go down towards 1. Down towards 0, sorry. Here's an example. I'm just going to show you some pictures of L series just for fun. That's all I see these as being for. But here's an example of an elliptic curve of rank 1, and this is the graph of the L series restricted to the real line. And it just looks like a nice curve that you might see in a calculus class. And notice here, there's a 0 of order 1. I'm sort of hinting at what the rank part of the conjecture says, which is that the order of vanishing of the function I just mentioned equals the rank of the elliptic curve. Here's another graph, or a whole bunch of other graphs, of L functions of elliptic curves of ranks 0, 1, 2, and 3. So you can see the order of vanishing indicated at 1 appears similar to what you would expect. Here's another graph that probably no one here has seen. It's a graph of the L series on the complex plane of that curve of rank 1, and you can see this is actually the absolute value of the L series, and you can see the 0 at s equal to 1 sort of right there. The colors hot is large and blue is cold. Red is hot and blue is cold. So it's kind of like a physics type graph. But any complex analytic function would look kind of like that.
You should plot the log of the absolute value that it would be equal. Obviously, the
It's actually a lot more obvious on my screen because the color depth is better too, but yeah. I have dozens and dozens of graphs, and this is just one random one I grabbed for the talk. And again, this isn't at all integral to this talk, it's just for fun because probably you guys haven't seen graphs like this before. Actually, if you have, could you raise your hand? You've seen graphs like this before?
Yeah. Oh, Frank cool. Ferris does them.
Frank Ferris.
Geometer.
But a Vell series of elliptic?
Not a Vell series.
Oh, no. That's right.
Sorry.
Yeah. Cool. So here's the conjecture I just mentioned. The order vanishing equals the rate. So this is not the conjecture that I'm going to worry about verifying, because there's this nice theorem. First, if the order of vanishing is less than or equal to 1, then you know that conjecture. So this is work of Kaliwagen and Zagier and de Grasse. So they've proved the order of vanishing equals the rank, the previous conjecture in this case. And you don't know it in any generality when the order of vanishing is 2 or greater, though there are examples. Okay, here's the exact formula. It says that the leading coefficient of the Taylor expansion of the L series about s equal to 1 is equal to the product of all of the natural invariants that you associate with an elliptic curve in that sort of nice way, where the torsion is on the bottom. And it looks a little bit like the analytic class number formula suitably interpreted, but,
one sort of, you have these fudge factors that appear here, and I don't know how you guys figure this out, but do you want to say anything? Now would be a good time.
Well, the morality is clearly indicated by the name that we gave to
fudge factors. Okay. So here, the cardinality E of Q tor is exactly as the notation suggests. It's the order of the torsion subgroup of the elliptic curve. The CP are the Tamagawa numbers. There are various ways to define it, but probably anything I say won't be too helpful. My favorite is you consider the neural model of the elliptic curve, reduce it modulo P, and you get a group scheme, and the Tamagawa number is the number of rational components of that group scheme. But you can also define it in terms of the reduction map to characteristic P. It's a measure of the number of components. The real volume is just this integral. The regulator is the absolute value of the discriminant of the height pairing on the Mordell-Weigh group. So to compute the regulator, you need to compute the Mordell-Weigh group, as far as we know. And the Shafravich-Tate group, the last quantity, is the kernel of a map on group Galois cohomology. So looking down this list, the torsion subgroup is fairly easy to compute. There's at least a quadratic time algorithm and the number of digits for computing it. On the Tamagawa numbers, you have Tate's algorithm. The real volume, the Gauss arithmetic geometric mean, gives you this quickly. The regulator, we don't even know whether you can compute that in general, because we don't know whether or not you can compute Mordell-Weigh groups, but conjecturally you can, and as we heard about in the last talk. And the Shafravich-Tate group, well, that's not exactly a straightforward thing to compute. In fact, this talk is about computing the Shafravich-Tate group. Here are a few more words about the Shafravich-Tate group. Again, it's the kernel of the map from the global Galois cohomology H1QE to the direct sum over all places of H1QVE. And the elements of the Shafravich-Tate group are equivalence classes of genus 1 curves with Jacobian, the elliptic curve, that have a point over each local field. And again, just to emphasize, computing SHA in practice is challenging. It took quite some time before somebody was able to compute even one of them. So it's a group, it has a definition, it's conjectured to be finite, but computing it isn't so easy. Here's John Cremona on Thursday in his office. And, it would be really neat if this were live and he would do his hand. But in any case, he wrote this wonderful book, which was published in 92 and then republished a little later. And one of the main things in the book is a table with lots and lots of quantities associated to elliptic curves. And this, in the second edition of his book, he has every elliptic curve of conductor up to 1,000. And they're enumerated, as you can see. So there's conductor 11, 14, 15, 17. The top curve in each case
Well, these are isogeny classes, and the top curve in each case is what's called the optimal one. Here, for 26, there are two isogeny classes, and the B1, that's the optimal one, and A1 is another optimal one. So they're separated by dashes. So the tables go on and on and on. There are over 5,000 curves listed in these tables. So they go on for quite some time. And an interesting challenge problem would be to verify the full Bertrand-Swinnerton-Dyer conjecture for every single curve listed in these tables. So I'll tell you kind of what you can do in that direction. But you know, it keeps going and going and going and going. Fortunately, I'm using XDVI, so I can scroll quickly, thanks to Voida. And finally, I get to the end. So here we are. Okay, so back to the talk. I'm just going to remind you of what I'm telling you about today. If you take any curve in these tables, and it doesn't have complex multiplication, which again excludes 44 of the little blocks, and you avoid primes that divide a Tamagawa number or are the degree of an isogeny, then the P part of the conjectural formula is true. By that I mean that formula, you can rewrite it as a formula for the order of the Shafravitch Tate group. And what's true is that the ord P of the actual order of Sha is equal to ord P of the conjectural order. So that's what you know for all except these few primes you have to leave off. This is just a slide about some computational tools I used. So I used Perry, MWRink, and Magma. Okay, so this is just making formal what I just said. If I say BSD at P, I'm asserting that the P primary part of the Shafravitch Tate group is finite, and that the order at P of that group is equal to the ord P of the number on the right-hand side, the conjectural order. And one remark is that Tate proved that the BSD conjecture, the truth of it is invariant under isogeny. If it's true for one curve, it's true for any other curve in the isogeny class. That's also true if you just restrict to the P part of the BSD conjecture. So if you have a curve and you know that the P part of the BSD conjecture is true, so BSD EP is true, then BSD E prime P is true for all curves isogenous to it. That doesn't follow formally from the statement that the whole conjecture is invariant under isogeny, but if you look at the proof, it follows. All right, so first, motivation for the project, of course, is computational evidence for the conjecture. If you verify the full conjecture for a huge number of curves, you've given evidence that the conjecture is true. Previous to this project, the main way that you would give computational evidence for the conjecture would be to compute the conjectural order of Sha and see that its order is consistent with what we know about the actual order of Sha. For example, if you compute the conjectural order of Sha and you get a half, then something's wrong because the order of a finite group is never one half. I think, didn't you do that once or something like
At some point we had, for the two curves, we had, I think, order 1/3.
Yeah, one third, 1/9, and...
Something
like that. There were threes in the denominator of the size of the shop.
So that's a problem. So that's one way in which you can give evidence for the conjecture. If you compute the conjectural order and it's not an integer, that's not evidence. But if it is an integer, you're more confident. For example, if it's one, then, it seems reasonable. There are parity considerations. For example, for elliptic curves, the true order of Sha, if finite, has to be a perfect square. And I guess if infinite also, because infinity square is infinity, but that's kind of silly. So you compute the conjectural order, and you find that you get a perfect square, and that makes you more confident in the conjecture. And there's a huge amount of data along those lines. For example, John Cremona in his book, he tells you about the conjectural order of Sha that he computes, and he says that for the optimal curves in all but four cases, the conjectural order is one. So if you look at his whole book, and then you look at the first line in any entry, so take that one right there, then he says the conjectural order of that Shafravitch Tate group should be one. And you can get bigger ones if you go to the ones that aren't the first one in the entry, the first one, but if you look at the first one, it's supposed to be one, except in four cases. The four exceptions are 571, 681, 960, and 960N. So let's look at 960 for fun. So here there's a bunch at 960. So D and N are supposed to have non-trivial Shafravich Tate groups. So that one right there, and then N, which I guess is on the next page. Yeah. By the way, Komoda and I last week came up with an alternative labeling for these, which I'll just run by you since we now have a big audience. We're thinking of changing to this. So the problem with this labeling is that when you get to Z, what comes after it?
Double A.
Double A. And then when you get to double Z, what comes after that?
Triple A.
And you know, for a number of around 1,000, that already gets very long. So a suggestion is that after Z, first we'll switch to lowercase letters, so that if you use uppercase letters, you mean the old version. Lowercase letters mean the new version. So after Z, the next thing would be AA, then AB, all the way down to AZ, and then BA, BB, all the way down to BZ, and CA, all the way down to CZ. Does that sound good, or?
Yes.
Okay.
AA, and so on?
Yeah. Yeah, then triple A, but all lowercase. But lowercase to distinguish from the old label. So if anybody doesn't like that, let me know, or thinks there's a good reason not to do that, let me know. So a four curse switch SHA is supposed to be non-trivial, and for all the other ones that are optimal, it's supposed to be trivial. So to prove the full Birch and Swinnerton Dyer conjecture for Komoda's book means, except in these four cases, you have to prove that that every other Shafravich Tate group of an optimal curve is trivial. That's an equivalent statement to the BSD conjecture up to conductor 1,000. Because one, we have isogeny invariance, and two, we have this calculation that Komoda did.
What does optimal mean?
Optimal means it's the first one in the table.
except at level 990.
Yeah, there's one counterexample to that, yes. Yes. But I think I think the statement would still be true even if you define it incorrectly for the purposes of this conjecture. But So optimal is also called strong vague curve in the literature. It's the curve that is closest, so every curve is modular, and there's a map from X0 of interior elliptic curve. Optimal means that if you take a minimal degree map from X0 of interior elliptic curve, a surjective map, then there's no curve intermediate between the two that's an elliptic curve. Okay, so it's the closest one to X0 of n. Actually, it might be amusing to do the same computation, find out which SHAs are non-trivial for X1 of n optimal instead of X0 of n optimal. I'm sure you could do that instantly. So the BSD conjecture at 2, if you're trying to prove that the Shafravich Tate group is trivial, and you know these curves are small conductors, so we know a lot about them, you just need to do a 2 descent in most cases, and see that E of Q mod 2 E of Q, compare E of Q mod 2 E of Q with the 2 Selmer group, which you can compute the F2 dimension of, and et cetera, and you can prove it, except in the cases when the 2 torsion SHA is really there, then you have to do additional work. So there are exactly 3 curves here. These are conjectured to have SHA of order 4, and if you compute the 2 Selmer group, you'll find that it's consistent with SHA having order 4, but it's conceivable that maybe SHA has order 16 in one of these examples, even though the conjecture says it should be 4. However, if you do a 4 descent in magma, then you'll discover that that there's no additional SHA when you go up to the 4 torsion in SHA from the 2 torsion in SHA. Basically, you can compute the 4 torsion in SHA. And there you find that you get the same thing as you had already with the 2 torsion. Therefore, in each of these cases, you get BSEE2. So if you take what Komoda already did, and then in 3 cases, you do a 4 descent in magma, you get the whole thing. So now we know BSD at 2 for every curve in Komoda's book, period, without any exception. So what are you going to do about primes other than 2? Well, descents don't get you very far, certainly not infinitely many primes. So enter Kalliwagen and then in a moment Kato, each of which have proved using Euler systems, an idea that Kalliwagen introduced a while ago. Each of them have proved very strong results that bound the orders of Shafravich Tate groups. So in one sentence, Kalliwagen says that the analytic rank of an elliptic curve is less than or equal to 1, then there's an explicit computable multiple of the Shafravich Tate group. And here's this theorem. I've simplified the theorem slightly. There's a theorem in the case of a CM elliptic curve as well, but I just state it here in the case of a non-CM elliptic curve. So here's the statement.
I'm going to assume that you know what Kiegner points are. I won't use too much about them. It's just a point defined over a quadratic imaginary field on the elliptic curve that you get via some recipe involving CM points on Jacobians of, well, CM points on modular curves. So here in the notation, yk is a Kiegner point attached to a quadratic imaginary field k, and here E is an elliptic curve over Q. And what Kalaivagan tells you is that if the representation rho bar EP is surjective and P is an odd prime, then you have this upper bound. Ord P of the order of Shah is at most twice ord P of the index of the Kiegner point in the full group of rational points over K. So it's an explicit bound on the order of Shah. It's computable because, it's computable because you can compute this, that's sort of a circular sentence, but in order to compute it, you have to compute this. The Kiegner point you can compute, maybe not in practice, but in theory it's a computable thing. And E of K, well, if the Kiegner point, if E of K has rank 1, you can compute it, and if it doesn't, well, then the Kiegner point was torsion, so you wouldn't get anything out of this anyways. I better be careful, I'm assuming the parity conjecture. So, I just had to, you know, there's a nightmarish possibility that E of K, that the Kiegner point is torsion, that E has analytic rank 3 over K, it has to have odd analytic rank, but maybe E of K is torsion because BSD is false, and the Kiegner point is torsion, so you get this bound that isn't correct. So implicit here is that the L function vanishes to order exactly 1 of E over K. So I think that should be added. It's a very subtle point, but it should definitely be added there. So if you take an just to summarize, if you take an elliptic curve over Q, and then you choose a quadratic imaginary field K that satisfies the Kiegner hypothesis, that's the Kiegner hypothesis is that each prime dividing the conductor of the elliptic curve splits in the quadratic imaginary field K. So it's just some congruence condition. You have that pair of data, and you have a Kiegner point, and then you consider the Kiegner point, it has infinite order, then you get this explicit bound on the order of the Schaffer-Hirschfeld group. Now the problem is, you need to compute this explicit bound and see what it gives you. And another problem is sometimes the bound isn't good enough. And in the sense that Shah should have order 1 over Q, going up, you go up to K, that doesn't really cause any problems because the only change can be at 2, except that additional primes could be added in. But it can be the case that no matter which K you use, even if you take the GCD of all these bounds, or the minimum of all these bounds, it can be the case that that index is always divisible by some number that's quite large, and you don't expect that number to divide the order of Shah. So there are potential problems there. Nonetheless, it's huge because it's a formula that says if you do a certain calculation, and then you get to exclude all but finitely many primes from consideration in trying to prove that the Schaffer-Hirschfeld group is trivial. Here's another sort of bigger picture, same bigger picture of Kalaivagan. So this is in New York, in I guess Little Koreatown, I don't know, or Chinatown. Here's another theorem of Kato. So this is in a very nice state right now. It says the following. If you have an elliptic curve over Q and its analytic rank is 0, the L function doesn't vanish, then again you have a bound on the order of the Schaffer-Hirschfeld group. So I'll state it as follows. If you have a prime P and it doesn't divide 6n, that is to say a prime greater than or equal to 5 that doesn't divide the conductor, then under the hypothesis that rho bar EP, that is the mod P Galois representation, is surjective, you have that the power of P that divides the order of Shah is at most the power of P that divides L of 1 over omega. So L of 1 over omega, that's not exactly the conjectural order of the Schaffer-Hirschfeld group, but it's certainly closely related. In the case of rank 0, L of 1 over omega is conjectured to be the product of the Tamagawa numbers times the order of Shah divided by the square of the order of the torsion subgroup. And if there's no torsion and no Tamagawa numbers, then this is this is the conjectural order of the Schaffer-Hirschfeld group. If you look at, for example, Rubin's paper where he talks about Kato's work initially and Tony Scholl's paper, they get a bound like this, but it's up to some unknown quantity. So it's not very useful for computations. But it's very useful if you want to prove Shah is finite, which is what they were doing. But additional work over the years has refined the unknown quantity so that under those hypotheses, the unknown quantity is 1. So if you look at the paper I wrote up on this whole talk, then there's better references for why this is true. So in the case of analytic rank zero, you have very good results towards BSD. And there's one little trick to keep in mind here also. Even if there's a Tamagawa number divisible by P, you still have a chance of proving Shaw's trivial. Suppose that L of E1 over omega is P, because a Tamagawa number is divisible by P, or is equal to P, and then there's, you know, Shaw's plus 3, 1, say there's, you know, there's some torsion, but it's coprime to P, then this says that the order of Shaw is less than or equal to, or P of Shaw is less than or equal to 1. And that's enough because you know Shaw is finite, so Shaw by, Shaw has to have order a perfect square, so the number on the left has to be even because of the Castle's tape pairing. So what you'd have is that, you know, either 0, 2, 4, etc. is less than or equal to 1. So there are some cases where you can use this trick. Yes?
Are there examples that show that this bound need not be sharp?
If you look just at the curves in Cremona's book, you're very lucky. There's not a single example. As soon as you go a little bit beyond the range, you find a lot. So I was lucky.
Yeah, so you'll find a lot of interesting examples. And it's very fun because then you can try to deal with this. But I didn't have to for this particular step of the project. Again, so here's the curves. We've dealt with the business at 2. There's the business at 3 for 681b. That curve has Shaw conjecturally of order 9. And, just sort of to be happy, it's good to check. The first thing I did was, you know, prove that Shaw has the conjectured order. So I told you about SHA-2, the two primary part of SHA having the conjectural order for three of these curves, and I'll tell you something about the three. So for 681b, the conjectural order of SHA is 9. So to prove that, you need to prove that no prime besides 3 divides the order of SHA, and you can do that using Colley-Bagans theorem. You find an auxiliary quadratic imaginary field, you work out what the explicit bound is, and you end up getting that the order of SHA divides 9. So that's good. But then you have to show that SHA really does have 9 elements in it. And there are two ways to do this. You know the rank is 0. One way is to simply run Michael Stoll's 3-descent package in magma, and it will give you that 3-Selmer group has dimension 2 over F3. And that gives it to you. An alternative is to note that there's an elliptic curve of conductor 681 and rank 2, and it has common 3 torsion with this elliptic curve. And then there's an argument initially due to Maser, which allows you to go from that torsion to the Schaffer average take group. So here the Schaffer average take group is visible, and that visibility gives you the lower bound as well. So there are two ways. There's actually a third way now. Grigor Grigorov just did a PhD thesis, as I mentioned earlier, under Richard Taylor, and in his thesis he gives a criterion for, well, he talks about how if you know something called the dual exponential map is non-zero in the context of Cotta's Euler system, that you get a lower bound on the order of the Schaffer average take group. And the cool thing is that he extended some work of Sam Williams, another PhD student at Harvard, with his own work, and was able to give a criterion purely in terms of modular symbols for non-vanishing of this dual exponential map. So there's an explicit modular symbols criterion, which in many cases allows you to see that the Schaffer average take group is non-trivial. So there are three ways to show non-trivial triviality of Schaffer average take groups. You can use a descent, you can use visibility, or you can use Kato, at least in the case of rank zero, combined with Grigorov's thesis.
Does this particular curve have a 3S orogeny?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. It's the first example of a curve that the elliptic order of Shaft is 2/3, but it doesn't have a 3S. It's kind of the first example.
Yeah.
I tried the 3-descent
one. Yeah, so you were the first to verify this.
Documentation doesn't work for this.
Oh.
Right. You didn't do the easy case. The multiple of the order, I think I already told you about that. Use the 4-descent command in magma to deal with 2, and use Colley-Bagan for the other parts. Yes, please.
Go back to the visibility thing. Just because we know that it would be visible if it existed, how does that prove that it exists?
So that was basically the idea of my PhD thesis, which was to, as I like to call it, flip Maser's idea on its head. But Maser said, you know, you have these things that would happen if it were visible, but in fact you can flip it around and you can define, what you do is you define a map from the Mordell V group of the other curve to the Schaffer average take group and you bound the kernel of that map. So you define a map. Maser wrote out the details of this from his point of view using some sort of abstract cohomology theory, and it's in an appendix to a paper I wrote with Linode. So he's written up all the details of this. But you can go both ways. If you have some SHA that's there, you can realize it as being visible and you get it in a Mordell Vey group, but also anytime you have a Mordell Vey, anytime subject to some conditions that are very mild, you have a Mordell Vey group and an elliptic curve, you have an elliptic curve with a non-trivial Mordell Vey group in an intersection, then you get a visible non-trivial Shafirovich-Tay group. So it's a way, you can think of visibility as a way of constructing non-trivial Shafirovich-Tay groups. So you go in both ways. This is just a list of the curves of rank greater than one. So just a little propaganda. As far as I know, so I'll phrase this appropriately, for these are the curves of rank 2. There's nothing of rank 3 up to conductor 1,000. For these E, perhaps nobody currently knows how to show that SHA is finite for even one of these curves. So you pick your favorite rank 2 curve. For me, it's this curve right here. And nobody has shown that SHA is finite. You can show that the 2 torsion SHA is finite, and the 3 torsion using your 3 descent. But what about the 5? What about the 7? What about everything? Should be trivial, but we don't know how to do that. And maybe somebody secretly has a proof and they won't tell anyone. So I don't want to say nobody knows how to do it. I mean, that happens. People secretly prove things and don't tell anyone. But usually not in this form. That's a big problem. And I just want to emphasize it so that maybe somebody here will remember it and solve it. There's one thing that you can do, which would be a good idea for a paper, which is if you fix a curve, you can use essentially this whole p-adic approach to the BSD conjecture to prove without having to do an explicit p-descent, which is hard if p is large. You can prove that, hopefully, I don't know if this approach has been carried out in very many cases, but you could prove that the p part of SHA is trivial. Bernadette Perrin-Rio actually has some examples along these lines in a paper she very recently published in Experimental Math, where she takes super singular primes and proves finiteness and, I guess, triviality of SHA P in curves of rank bigger than 1. So that's a nice paper. But it would be nice to systematically do this. Take one elliptic curve and maybe prove it for all primes up to 100 using various techniques. Prove that SHA is trivial.
So these things are too big to use the descent thing.
Yeah.
Does Grigor's new thing...
Well, Grigor's is lower bounds, mainly, and Kato. But Kato is only for rank 0.
And these probably are things.
Yeah, but Grigor's work would be very relevant to proving non-triviality of SHA for one of these. But, in fact, SHA is trivial for each of these. So, although, I should be careful. You might actually be able to get something out of it. I take that back. I think what Grigor does... not as I explained it here, but I think what he really does would be relevant to this, because really what he's doing is verifying the main conjecture of P in certain cases, and then from that he's deducing triviality of, or he's deducing a lower bound on SHA. But that's the same sort of thing that you have to verify in order to apply some of the things listed at the bottom of the slide. One important input to this computation is computation of p-adic heights. These are rank 2 curves, so given a prime p, you need to compute the p-adic regulator. It's an input to a p-adic analog of the BSD conjecture that you'll have to use in order to show that the p part of SHA is trivial. And there was this algorithm of Kiran-Kedlaya, which is this earth-shattering way of counting points on hyperelliptic, or more generally, genus G curves over finite fields. But interestingly, the methods that he uses there could be suitably applied to elliptic curves and allow you to give a much better way of computing p-adic height pairings on elliptic curves, at least for primes up to about 1,000 or so. So that's just a total aside. A quick summary of the counts. They're about 2,460. Well, they're exactly 2,460 optimal curves. We throw away 18 because we can't do anything with them. Leaving that many curves. Of these, we have 2,441 that have conjecturally trivial SHA. We like to show that. 44 have CN, so we don't worry about that. So you have 2,397 curves, which you want to show that SHA is trivial. I can't do that, but as a first step, I'll show that they're not divisible by any that if you have a prime that doesn't divide a Tamagawa number or a Pi isogeny, then SHA is trivial at that prime. So now I'm going to finally tell you a little bit about how that works. Okay, the first stumbling block that you run into if you naively try to apply what I've told you so far is that there's a hypothesis, namely that the Gal representation is surjective, the mod P Gal representation is surjective. So if you have a specific elliptic curve and you like to get an upper bound on the order of its Shacharit Shteku. And let's say the curve has rank either 0 or 1, so that we're going to apply Kali-Bacon, or it has rank 0, so we're going to apply Kato. In each case, they have the hypothesis that the Gower representation is surjective. So, especially Kato has that hypothesis. The first thing that happened when we saw that hypothesis is that certain people, especially Michael Skull and Steve Donnelly, came up with an analog of Kali-Bacon, a slight weakening of Kali-Bacon's theorem, which replaces the surjectivity hypothesis by an easier-to-check hypothesis, which at the end comes down to, if you look at the isogeny class of the elliptic curve, nothing in the isogeny class should have a p-torsion point. So it's very easy to check by looking in Cremona's tables. So the surjectivity input to Kali-Bacon's theorem can be weakened and replaced by something a bit nicer, but not to Kato's theorem. And you really want to be able to apply both of them. Together, they give the best bounds. So fortunately, there's a theorem that's in this paper of Kojikara and Kani, and it's like a few lines and a reference to Sarah, so I'm going to call it a theorem of all three of them. And it says the following: if you have any first non-CM elliptic curve, if you have a prime P that's bigger than this completely explicit and very easy to compute function of the conductor, then the representation is surjective. So after a while, the representation is surjective. There are much better results, for example, for semi-stable elliptic curves. But does anybody know what it is for semi-stable elliptic curves?
It's like 11.
Yeah, it's 11. So there you can replace this big bound by 11. But in general, you have this bound. And what that says is, as far as applying Kali-Bacon's theorem or Kato's theorem, you automatically get to apply it at, or you get the surjectivity hypothesis above that bound. If you like to have the surjectivity hypothesis at sort of the best possible collection of primes, then you need something additional, but you only need to do that up to that bound. So step one is you compute this bound, and step two is you look at each prime up to the bound. And for each prime up to the bound, if you look carefully at one of Sarah's papers on images of Gower representations, then you'll deduce this proposition. This proposition isn't something that like sort of gives you a computable criterion, but it's close enough in practice. So basically what it says is you look at the Fourier coefficients of the modular form attached to the elliptic curve, you have some Legendre symbol condition, and you can look at it, and if the representation weren't surjective, then you have the funny condition that these numbers you compute would always be in 0, 1, or would always be in 0, minus 1. So if you compute these numbers, you go along, and you find that you get both minus 1 and 1, then you've proved that the representation has to be surjective. This is a prime greater than or equal 5. The reason is basically you have a classification of the subgroups of GL2 FP, and if you're in any of the non-surjective cases for an elliptic curve, then you can prove that all the S of L's, these numbers, have to be 0, 1, or 0, minus 1. So here's the algorithm. You compute these numbers, and if ever you get both 1 and minus 1, you know the representation is surjective. If for a long time you get bored and you're always getting 0 or 1, you're morally convinced that it's reducible. So what you do is then you look and see. It's pretty easy to see if it's reducible, especially in Cremona's tables. You just look to see whether there's a P isogeny. So if you get 0 minus 1, then you try to show it's a non-split torus. These are things that you can show via explicit computational involving, say, the P division polynomial of the elliptic curve. So basically, you can imagine having one sort of processor computing these numbers, and another, and then if that one doesn't finish, you can also be trying to prove that it's reducible in some way, or at least not surjective. And at some point, one of those two things will finish. So it really does give you an algorithm.
Sorry, William?
Yes.
This last possibility, non-split torus.
Yeah.
What does it mean in terms of the character of the polynomial?
I think it will be irreducible. But it'd be better to talk to me afterwards.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of
things
still left
time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a condition involving the polynomial, and I've just converted it immediately into this. I mean, this is just saying something about whether or not the polynomial is reducible or irreducible. So it's the condition should be irreducible when it's minus 1. Okay. So I mentioned this a minute ago. This is a slide about slight relaxations of the hypotheses of Kali-Bacon's theorem. So this guy Cha, who's a student at John Hopkins of Christian Popescu, relaxed the hypotheses of Kolyvagin's theorem in one way, as you can see at the top. So he has to avoid the discriminant of your auxiliary quadratic imaginary field. That's not so bad, because you could use more than one field, though that in practice isn't so easy. And he requires that your prime square doesn't divide the level, but in that case, as long as the representation is irreducible, you get that bound. And 608b is an example, and p equals 5 is an example for which Cha's theorem applies, but Kato's doesn't. I think a better relaxation of the hypotheses is this one. This is what essentially this dude is still in Donnelly, and it's the assertion that the order of Cha is bounded exactly like in Kolyvagin, but the surjectivity hypothesis is replaced by, you look in the isogeny class of the elliptic curve, but you look over K, I didn't make that clear before, and if there's no torsion over K, then if there's no P torsion over K, then you can apply the theorem, and you get a bound. So this is easier to check. But if you want to apply Kato, for example, you really need to do it. I said on this previous slide, you find all the primes for which the representation might not be surjective or is not surjective, and then there's only a finite list there, and then you look at all the other primes, and that's where you can apply it. By the way, I made a table, which I put on my webpage, of the image of Galois. So here's an example. It goes up pretty far, but this is a table. It gives it's in sort of the Cremona format. It gives an elliptic curve, and then it gives the primes for which the representation is not surjective, and why, and some information about why. So you can consult this table, and in any particular case, up to the range of the table. So it's actually kind of interesting. If you look at the table, maybe if you've never really thought about this so carefully, you might wonder how often is the Gal representation surjective. You have this, you know, for semi-stable elliptic curves, it's greater than or equal to 11, all primes greater than or equal to 11. But for general curves, you have a bound, but it could be pretty big. But in fact, if you actually look at real elliptic curves, it's extremely rare to have a large prime for which the representation is not surjective. And in fact, the list of primes at which it isn't surjective is usually very small. That's the right-hand column in this table. So you see that, you know, 2, 3, and 5 seem to pop up on a fairly regular basis, but you're not seeing, you know, 10 or 15 primes where it's irreducible but not surjective, and then after a while it gets to be surjective. These things really, really do want to be surjective as much as possible. Okay. Here's another remark. So you have this theorem of Kolyvagin, and it says you have to compute the index of a Higner point in the full group of rational points. And that kind of sounds like a lot of work. If you take a curve of, if you take a curve and then you twist by some quadratic imaginary field and look at the Higner point, you can have large height. Here's an example, 546E, that quadratic imaginary field, which I think was the first one that I was able to use, the Higner point is height 7,315. And Higner points of large height, that large of height, could start to be hard to compute. I'm scared to say that to Mark because he's really good at this now, but... You don't think that one would be at all harder to directly compute?
I don't.
It's only
7,000. I don't think so. I don't think it'd be difficult at all.
Okay. Well, it would be nice to avoid it if you could.
So the Higner point here is not the generator. So the Higner point is something kind of generator.
Yeah.
You get the generator, which is much smaller, like maybe just multiple.
Well, it might have much smaller height. It might or might not. But so you have to do you'd have to do a direct search to compute the generator, right? Using a descent.
No, you compute the generator via Higner point.
Oh, well, okay. You get the Higner point
and
divide.
You
and
multiply it by
giving
you the Higner
point. Yeah. But that's only if you're lucky and that this thing's really divisible. It might not be. It may or may not be. You don't know a priori. It could just be big. In any case, you're doing some work to do that, right? I mean, it's not trivial. But in this particular case, you don't actually need to do very much work at all. So you know the height of the Higner point without actually computing it using the Gross-Aguillet formula. Gross-Aguillet tells you the height in terms of special values of L functions, which you can compute very quickly just by computing a few terms of the L series. Also, there's a bound of Cremona, Prickett, and Siksek. There's the CPS bound. And it says that the difference between the naive and canonical height is at most 13.08, etc. So if you look at the elliptic curve and search for points up to height 18, logarithmic height 18, which is the sort of thing you can just do very, very quickly, then that gives you a bound on what the index of the Huebner point could be in the full group of rational points. So you just do this very quick search, you get a bound, and that translates into the index of the Huebner point in the full group of k rational points being at most 28. Now, forget how 546 factors. That's not going to work. So it's 2, 3, 7, 13. So you have to worry about the possibility that Shaw is divisible by 3, 7, and 13 in this particular example. But here the rank is 0, so you can apply Kato, and you know that the only primes that might divide the order of Shaw are primes that primes that divide the level. So that argument is really bad. How did I do this one? Well, actually, I don't remember the. I mean, well, it's an example. I'm just showing you how to bound the index without having to compute the index. So really, that's the point of the example. I was just trying to explain how to kind of apply all the theorems to deal with triviality of Shaw in this case, but I think I better not, because I'm not sure exactly which things come together to work. But you see that just by doing a quick point search and computing something about an L function, you're able to bound the index without computing any points at all. Also, this is very nice because when you actually compute points via recognizing them from floating point numbers, you have some questions about the rigor of what you're doing. Whereas what I'm doing here, it's much easier to bound, rigorously bound the errors in the various calculations that you're doing using interval arithmetic. Okay, so I've told you really all the inputs that go into the calculation, some tricks for computing indexes of Huebner points. There's that one that I just mentioned. There are some other things that you can do. But at the end of the day, you end up computing lots of indexes of Huebner points and also determining images of Gal representations. And if you do that long enough, you end up getting a small list of curves for which nothing you've done so far has proved triviality of Shaw, but you've proved it away from some, you know, small list of primes. And if you work really, really hard, that small list of primes ends up being just involving 3, and then you run a 3 descent on those particular curves. And it worked perfectly. Everything came together. Each theorem applied exactly as needed, combining Kato and Kollwiegen, and everything up to 1,000 subject to hypothesis I mentioned worked. But there's one big problem if you want to extend this to the case when P does divide a Tamagawa number. The problem is that if P divides a Tamagawa number, then assuming the BSD conjecture, P will divide the index of the Huebner point in the full group of rational points. Well, in the case of rank 0, you can apply Kato and kind of deal with this, but at least up to 1,000. But in the case of rank 1, there's no Kato to apply. It's no theorem of Kato to apply. And you have a problem. So, for example, if you look at curves up to conductor 1,000, there are 91 curves that are optimal, for which there's a prime greater than or equal to 7 that divides one of the Tamagawa numbers. And there's no reason for that prime to be a prime for which the representation is reducible. So you have these primes that are relatively large, and they can get bigger than 7, you know, 11, 13, and so on. There are primes bigger than 7 that divide these. So you end up with the condition, with the situation where the index of the Huebner point is always divisible by this annoying prime. And unfortunately, I haven't figured out a good way of refining Kollwiegen's theorem so that it works in this case. I mean, one should expect that really what you have is a bound on the order of Shaw minus the order P of the product of the Tamagawa numbers. That's what BSD suggests that Kollwiegen should have proved. But unfortunately, it seems very difficult to do that. Nonetheless, I still hold hope that one could modify or extend Kollwiegen's arguments to prove that. So I think a good project for somebody would be to take what Kollwiegen did, and instead of having this theorem, well, I'll just state it this way, you have that minus ord p of the product of the Tamagawa numbers. That's what should be true, and that has not been proved, unfortunately. Another way to think of it might be ord p of the cardinality of Shaw direct sum, or times the cardinality of the, ord p of the cardinality of some group whose order is the same as the order of Shaw times the product of the Tamagawa numbers should be less than or equal to this bigger bound. And there actually is a group that conjecturally, or that is very likely to have that order, that is the first atal cohomology of the neural model E over Z. That is essentially of order the product of the Tamagawa numbers times the order of Shaw, at least assuming
assuming a conjecture, but I mean, you don't know for sure that it's right. But what?
Spec C, comma,
yeah.
E.
Yeah. So I think Mazur uses a whole bunch in his paper on rational points on abelian varieties and towers of number fields. Okay, so just to conclude, as I mentioned before, you throw in three descents and four descents in a few cases, and you're able to sort of bring everything together. And if you read through the paper, which I recommend, of course, and it's at this URL, which is easily accessible from my webpage, it's very fun seeing how everything sort of comes together. At the end, you're able to prove the stated theorem for every curve. And just to finish, the next step, as the audience, is to write a paper with me. And here's a list of possible things to write a paper with me about, or to write one yourself about. But I would hope to write a paper about each of these things at some point. So one is do this project, but for CM elliptic curves. People know even way more about CM elliptic curves. That should be, in some sense, easier, maybe much easier. But just choose some cutoff, such as 1,000, then you only have 44 curves to deal with, but maybe 70,000, which is how far Cremona's currently got at enumerating elliptic curves. And try to prove the full Burchin-Sorrentin Dyer conjecture for every CM curve of rank 0 and of rank 1 in that list. So I think that would be a good project to have a similar flavor, but the techniques, to some extent, would be different, since there are some nice theorems are just about CM elliptic curves. Another project would be to rigorously verify that the Manning constants 1, where I really mean a high level of rigor, not just
so,
you compute something and all.
I realize
you have
what
to
I said before
things.
Is not quite correct. You're really going to need Baza-Exoven to write up his results, that, given that
I think
there is at 2, 3, 5, and 7. And he's never done that.
Oh, in what you said, you assumed an explicit upper bound? You assumed
yeah.
more than just integrality of the Manning constant?
Yeah, I mean, oh. you really need some sort of upper bound, so you're going to have to get Bosch to do this thing that he's been thinking
for. I'm not sure you need that, but I haven't thought about the problem correctly. My impression is that this is supposed to be an order of difficulty, so my impression is it wouldn't be quite that hard. That probably just using integrality is enough. You just need that the C4 and C6 that you get from the modular symbols are the C4 and C6 of a minimal wire stress equation. That's all you need. So, but I don't know. We can talk about it later. Another thing is, this one up to 1,000, there's interesting phenomenon, like the Kato bound not being sharp, that happens just over 1,000. So extend this computation to some larger bound. And I think someone in here had an example of a curve where they wanted to apply this sort of thing, you did, and it had conductor 1,200 or something, or something like that. So it's beyond the range. Another project is to deal with isogenies, so I excluded all primes which have a P isogeny, so do those. So that's something that Michael might have some input about.
That's, I mean,
you were going to do that part, and then you didn't.
It's
so not
very large,
and
if
it's
just
yeah.
two, you should be able to do this without great problem.
Good. Okay, another thing is to extend Kaliwagen's theorem to deal with the Tamagawa numbers. So Kaliwagen proves this bound, it should incorporate the Tamagawa numbers, but it doesn't. And then finally, another challenge problem would be to verify the full Burchin-Sorrentin Dyer conjecture for each Jacobian J naught of n up to 100. Sort of an arbitrary bound, but or at least each simple factor of J naught of n, which would be enough to prove it for J naught of n, of course. So that's the end of my talk. Thank you very much, and I hope you do that. Yes?
Yeah, this is actually not a question about the talk, but a sort of a vague comment about the conjectures of Burchin-Sorrentin Dyer, which is, I mean, one thing which has always struck me is that in the definition of the L function, on one side, you define the L function as a product of the Euler factors, which are characteristic polynomials of Fabelius. So you're throwing in all the characteristic polynomials that you have locally. So I would expect that on the other side you would get some global characteristic polynomial as a factor. Like you should, instead of being able to predict the regulator, you should be able to predict the characteristic polynomial of the height pairing matrix. Has anyone had any hunches about that?
Yes, there is a more elegant form of the Burchin-Sorrentin Dyer conjecture. I'm glad there isn't a blackboard here, so I can't actually write it down.
There's a whiteboard.
You should when you define the L function, you should include a factor for the prime at infinity, replace it infinity, put it at the place, and you should include the Tamagawa numbers, because to have a Tamagawa number greater than one really tells you that you have more than one distinct copy of the curve at that prime to think about. So you've got the modified L series. You multiply that. You take that at S. You multiply it by the square of the height zeta function at S minus 1. And you let S tend to 1. And the answer, conjecturally, is simply the order of the Tate-Chaffarader group. Everything else has gone out in the wash. And that, I think, is what you were asking for.
Yeah.
The odd thing about this, to my mind, is the fact that the height zeta function turns up square.
Thank you.
Yeah, more questions, comments?
I guess 8 is proof that whole Bertrand's for internet architecture. That's really the whole thing. That would be the best algorithm for her. Thank you. All the other stuff wants to be. Okay, then I think we should have lunch. Again, at 2:30,
I'm sorry to bother you about this.
No, sure.
I'm sure you explained it to me many times, but can you just tell me how you prove that the map from, I know what map it is, from the Mordell Bakewell E to the HFR prime? How do you prove that the kernel? How do you prove that that's not
true? Let's see, I think it's actually easy to prove it's not true. The hard part is proving that it maps to Shaw.
Well, it obviously maps to the sum. Let me come around.
Yeah. She's asked. Oh, she asked exactly the question of how the visibility construction works. I'm trying to think how to answer it. She wants to know why. The problem is there's two maps to consider. Mazur does one and I do the other. How do you prove that Shaw is non-trivial? How do you construct non-trivial Shaw from the word of X? That's your question.
So the idea is that you have a part of Shaw that's the visible part. What's known about is